shadows held around them, and brought up the photos he'd snapped in the Fey archives last night. But he didn't share them, not before he said to Athalar, "Luna's horn was a weapon wielded by Peleus, the first Starborn prince during the First Wars. The Fey forged it in their homeworld, named it for the goddess in their new one, and used it to battle the demon hordes once they made the crossing. Peleus wielded the horn until he died." Rune put a hand on his chest. "My ancestor, whose power flows in my veins. I don't know how it worked, how Peleus used it with his magic, but the horn became enough of a nuisance for the demon princes that they did everything they could to retrieve it from him." Rune held out his phone, the picture of the illuminated manuscript glaringly bright in the thick shadows. The illustration of the carved horn lifted to the lips of a helmeted Fey male was as pristine as it had been when inked millennia ago. Above the figure gleamed an eight-pointed star, the emblem of the Starborn. Bryce went wholly still, the stillness of the Fey, like a stag halting in a wood. Rune went on. "The Star Eater himself bred a new horror just to hunt the horn, using some blood he managed to spill from Prince Peleus on a battlefield and his own terrible essence. A beast twisted out of the collision of light and darkness." Rune swiped on his phone, and the next illustration appeared. The reason he'd had her come here had taken this gamble. Bryce recoiled at the grotesque pale body, the clear teeth bared in a roar. "You recognize it," Rune said softly. Bryce shook herself, as if to bring herself back to reality, and rubbed her thigh absently. "That's the demon I found attacking the angel in the alley on that night." Hunt gave her a sharp look.
"The one that attacked you, too?"
Bryce gave a small affirmative nod.
"What is it?"
"It dwells in the darkest depths of the pit," Rune answered. "So lightless that the Star Eater named it the Crystallos for its clear blood and teeth."
Athalar said,
"I've never heard of it."
Bryce contemplated the drawing.
"It...
there was never a mention of a fucking demon in the research I did on the horn." She met his gaze. "No one put this together 2 years ago?"
"I think it's taken 2 years to put it together," Rune said carefully. "This volume was deep in the Fey archives, with the stuff that's not allowed to be scanned. None of your research would have ever pulled it up. The entire damn thing was in the old language of the Fey."
And had taken him most of the night to translate. Throwing in the lingering fog of the Mirthroot hadn't helped. Bryce's brow furrowed.
"But the horn was broken. It basically became a dud, right?"
"Right," Rune said. "During the final battle of the First Wars, Prince Peleus and the Prince of the Pit faced each other. The two of them fought for like 3 fucking days, until the Star Eater struck the fatal blow. But not before Peleus was able to summon all the horn's strength and banished the Prince of the Pit, his brethren, and their armies back to hell. He sealed the Northern Rift forever, so only small cracks in it or summonings with salt can bring them over now."
Athalar frowned.
"So you mean to tell me this deadly artifact, which the Prince of the Pit literally bred a new demon species to hunt, was just sitting here, in this temple, and no one from this world or hell tried to take it until that blackout? Why?"
Bryce met Hunt's disbelieving stare.
"The horn cracked in two when Peleus sealed the Northern Rift. Its power was broken. The Fey and Asteri tried for years to renew it through magic and spells and all that crap, but no luck. It was given a place of honor in the Asteri archives, but when they established Lunathian a few millennia later, they had it dedicated to the temple here."
Rune shook his head. "That the Fey allowed for the artifact to be given over suggests they dismissed its worth. That even my father might have forgotten its importance.
Until it was stolen, and he'd gotten it into his head that it would be a rallying symbol of power during a possible war." Bryce added,
"I thought it was just a replica, until Jessica made me start looking for it."
She turned to Rune.
So you think someone has been summoning this demon to hunt for the horn? But why, when it no longer has any power? And how does it explain any of the deaths? You think the victims somehow had contact with the horn, and it brought the Crystallos right to them?
She went on before either of them could answer.
And why the 2-year gap?
Hunt mused.
Maybe the murderer waited until things calmed down enough to resume searching.
Your guess is as good as mine, Rune admitted. It doesn't seem like coincidence that the horn went missing right before this demon showed up, though. And for the murders to be starting again?
Could mean someone is hunting for the horn once more, Bryce finished, frowning.
Hunt said,
The Crystallos' presence in Lunathian suggests the horn is still inside the city walls.
Bryce pinned Rune with a look.
Why does the Autumn King suddenly want it?
Rune chose his words carefully. Call it pride. He wants it returned to the Fae.
And wants me to find it quietly.
Athalar asked him,
But why ask you to look for the horn?
The shadows veiling them rippled.
Because Prince Peleus's starborn power was woven into the horn itself. And it's in my blood. My father thinks I might have some sort of preternatural gift to find it.
He admitted, when I was browsing the archives last night, this book jumped out at me.
Literally?
Bryce asked, brows high.
Rune said, It just felt like it shimmered. I don't fucking know. All I know is I was down there for hours, and then I sensed the book, and when I saw that illustration of the horn, there it was. The crap I translated confirmed it.
So the Crystallos can track the horn, Bryce said, eyes glittering. But so can you.
Athalar's mouth curled in a crooked grin, catching Bryce's drift.
We find the demon. We find who's behind this. And if we have the horn?
Rune grimaced. The Crystallos will come to us. Bryce glanced to the empty-handed statue behind them.
Better get cracking, Rune.
Hunt leaned against the entry pillars atop the steps leading into Luna's temple, his phone at his ear. He'd left Quinlan inside with her cousin, needing to make this phone call before they could sort out logistics. He would have made the call right there, but the moment he pulled up his contacts list, he'd earned a snipe from Bryce about mobile phones in sacred spaces.
Cathona, spare him.
Declining to tell her to fuck off, he'd decided to spare them a public scene and stalked out through the cypress-lined courtyard and to the front steps. 5 temple acolytes emerged from the sprawling villa behind the temple itself, bearing brooms and hoses to clean the temple steps and the flagstones beyond it for their midday washing. Unnecessary, he wanted to tell the young females. With the misting rain yet again gracing the city, the hoses were superfluous. Teeth gritted, he listened to the phone ring and ring.
Pick the fuck up, he muttered.
A dark-skinned temple acolyte, black-haired, white-robed, and no more than 12, gaped at him as she walked past, clutching a broom to her chest. He nearly winced, realizing the portrait of wrath he now presented, and checked his expression. The Fae girl still kept back, the golden crescent moon dangling from a delicate chain across her brow, glinting in the gray light. A waxing moon, until she became a full-fledged priestess upon reaching maturity, when she would trade the crescent for the full circle of Luna. And whenever her immortal body began to age and fade, her cycle vanishing with it, she would again trade the charm, this time for a waning crescent. The priestesses all had their own reasons for offering themselves to Luna, for forsaking their lives beyond the temple grounds and embracing the goddess's eternal maidenhood. Just as Luna had no mate or lover, so they would live. Hunt had always thought celibacy seemed like a bore, until Shahar had ruined him for anyone else. Hunt offered the shrinking acolyte his best attempt at a smile. To his surprise, the Fae girl offered a small one back. The girl had courage. Justinian Gelos answered on the 6th ring. How's babysitting? Hunt straightened, Don't sound so amused. Justinian huffed a laugh. You sure Micah's not punishing you? Hunt had considered the question a great deal in the past 2 days. Across the empty street, the palm trees dotting the rain-soft grasses of the Oracle's park shone in the gray light, the domed onyx building of the Oracle's temple veiled in the mists that had rolled in over the river. Even at midday, the Oracle's park was near empty, save for the hunched, slumbering forms of the desperate Vanir and humans who wandered the paths and gardens, waiting for their turn to enter the incense-filled hallways. And if the answers they sought weren't what they'd hoped? Well, the white-stoned temple on whose steps Hunt now stood could offer some solace. Hunt glanced over his shoulder to the dim temple interior just visible through the towering bronze doors. In the first light from a row of shimmering braziers, he could just barely make out the gleam of red hair in the quiet gloom of the inner sanctum, shining like molten metal as Bryce talked animatedly with Rune.
No, Hunt said at last. I don't think this assignment was punishment. He was out of options and knew I'd cause more trouble if he stationed me on guard duty around Sandriel.
And Pollux. He didn't mention the bargain he'd struck with Micah, not when Justinian bore the halo as well, and Micah had never shown much interest in him beyond his popularity with the grunt troops of the 33rd. If there was any sort of deal to earn his freedom, Justinian had never said a word. Justinian blew out a breath. Yeah, shit's getting intense around here right now. People are on edge and she hasn't even arrived yet. You're better off where you are. A glassy-eyed fae male stumbled past the steps of the temple, got a good look at who was barring entry into the temple itself, and aimed for the street, staggering toward the Oracle's park and the domed building in its heart. Another lost soul looking for answers in smoke and whispers.
I'm not so sure of that, Hunt said. I need you to look something up for me. An old-school demon. The Crystallos. Just search through the databases and see if anything pops up.
He'd have asked Vic, but she was already busy going through the alibi footage from the Viper Queen.
I'll get on it, Justinian said. I'll message over any results.
He added, good luck.
I'll need it, Hunt admitted, in 100 fucking ways.
Justinian added slyly, though, it doesn't hurt that your partner is easy on the eyes.
I gotta go.
No one gets a medal for suffering the most, you know.
Justinian pushed, his voice slipping into uncharacteristic seriousness.
It's been 2 centuries since Shahar died, Hunt.
Whatever.
He didn't want to have this conversation, not with Justinian or anyone.
It's admirable that you're still holding out for her, but let's be realistic about...
Hunt hung up, debated throwing his phone against a pillar. He had to call Isaiah and Micah about the horn. Fuck. When it had gone missing 2 years ago, top inspectors from the 33rd and the Ox had combed this temple. They'd found nothing. And since no cameras were allowed within the temple walls, there had been no hint of who might have taken it. It had been nothing more than a stupid prank, everyone had claimed. Everyone except for the Autumn King, it seemed. Hunt hadn't paid much attention to the theft of the horn, and sure as fuck hadn't listened during history lessons as a boy about the first wars. And after Danica's and the Pack of Devils' murders, they'd had bigger things to worry about. He couldn't tell what was worse, the horn possibly being a vital piece of this case, or the fact that he'd now have to work alongside Rune Dannon to find it. Chapter 22 Bryce waited until Hunt's muscled back and beautiful wings had disappeared through the inner sanctum's gates before she whirled on Rune. Did the Autumn King do it? Rune's blue eyes glimmered in his shadow nest, or whatever the fuck he called it.
No. He's a monster in so many ways, but he wouldn't kill Danica.
She'd come to that conclusion the other night, but she asked, how can you be so sure? You have no idea what the hell his long-term agenda is. Rune crossed his arms.
Why ask me to hunt for the horn if he's summoning the Crystallos?
Two trackers are better than one?
Her heart thundered.
He's not behind this. He's just trying to take advantage of the situation, to restore the Fae to their former glory. You know how he likes to delude himself with that kind of crap.
Bryce trailed her fingers through the wall of shadows, the darkness running over her skin like mist.
Does he know you came to meet with me?
No.
She held her brother's stare.
Why?
She struggled for words.
Why bother?
Because I want to help you. Because this shit puts the entire city at risk.
A very chosen one of you.
Silence stretched between them, so taut it trembled. She blurted, just because we're working together doesn't mean anything changes between us. You'll find the horn, and I'll find who's behind this. End of story.
Fine, Rune said, his eyes cold. I wouldn't expect you to consider listening to me anyway.
Why would I listen to you? She seethed. I'm just a half-breed slut, right?
Rune stiffened, a flush flaring.
You know it was a dumb fight, and I didn't mean that.
Yes, you fucking did, she spat, and turned on her heel. You might dress like you're a punk rebelling against Daddy's rules, but deep down, you're no better than the rest of the Fae shitheads who kiss your chosen one ass.
Rune snarled, but Bryce didn't wait before shoving through the shadows, blinking at the flood of light that greeted her, and aiming for where Hunt had paused at the doors.
Let's go,
she said. She didn't care what he'd overheard. Hunt lingered in place, his black eyes flickering as he gazed toward the shadowed back of the room, where her so-called cousin was again veiled in darkness. But the angel thankfully said nothing, as he fell into step beside her, and she said nothing more to him. Bryce practically ran back to the gallery, in part to start researching the horn again, but also thanks to the flurry of messages from Jessiba, demanding to know where she was, whether she still wanted her job, and whether she'd prefer to be turned into a rat or a pigeon. And then an order to get back now to greet a client. 5 minutes after Bryce got there, Jessiba's client, a raging asshole of a leopard shifter who believed he was entitled to put his paws all over her ass, prowled in and purchased a small statue of Solas and Cathona, portrayed as a son with male features burying his face in a pair of mountain-shaped breasts. The holy image was known simply as the Embrace. Her mother even wore its simplified symbol, a circle nestled atop two triangles as a silver pendant. But Bryce had always found the Embrace cheesy and cliché in every incarnation. 30 minutes and 2 blatant rejections to his slimy come-ons later, Bryce was mercifully alone again. But in the hours she looked, the gallery's databases for Luna's horn revealed nothing beyond what she already knew, and what her brother had claimed that morning. Even Lahaba, gossip queen extraordinaire, didn't know anything about the horn. With Rune heading back to the Fae archives to see if any more information appealed to his starborn sensibilities, she supposed she'd have to wait for an update. Hunt had gone to take watch on the roof, apparently needing to make calls to his boss, or whatever Micah pretended he was, and Isaiah regarding the horn. He hadn't tried to come back down to the library, as if sensing she needed space.
Look toward where it hurts the most. That's always where the answers are.
Bryce found herself staring down at the half-finished list she'd started that morning. She might not be able to find much on the horn itself, but maybe she could figure out how the hell Danica factored into all of it. Hands shaking, she made herself finish the list of Danica's locations, as far as she knew. By the time the sun was near setting and Syrinx was ready to be walked home, Bryce would have traded what was left of her soul to a reaper just for the quiet comfort of her bed. It had been a long fucking day, full of information she needed to process, and a list that she'd left in her desk drawer. It must have been a long day for Athalar, too, because he trailed her and Syrinx from the skies without saying a word to her. She was in bed by 8, and didn't even remember falling asleep. Chapter 23.
The next morning, Bryce was sitting at the reception desk in the gallery's showroom, staring at her list of Danica's last locations, when her phone rang. The deal with the Leopard went through, she said to Jessica by way of greeting. The paperwork had been finalized an hour ago. I need you to go up into my office and send me a file from my computer.
Bryce rolled her eyes, refraining from snipping, "You're welcome," and asked,
"You don't have access to it?" I made sure this one wasn't on the network.
Nostrils flaring, Bryce rose, her leg throbbing slightly, and walked to the small door in the wall adjacent to the desk. A hand on the metal panel beside it had the enchantments unlocking, the door swinging open to reveal the tight carpeted staircase upward.
When I want things done, Bryce, you're to do them. No questions.
Yes, Jessica, Bryce muttered, climbing the stairs, dodging the reaching hands of the Leopard shifter yesterday had twinged something bad in her leg.
Would you like to be a worm, Bryce?
Jessica purred, voice sliding into something eerily close to a reaper's rasp. At least Jessica wasn't one of them, even if Bryce knew the sorceress often dealt with them in the House of Flame and Shadow. Thank the gods none had ever shown up at the gallery, though.
Would you like to be a dung beetle or a centipede?
I'd prefer to be a dragonfly.
Bryce entered the small plush office upstairs. One wall was a pane of glass that overlooked the gallery floor a level below, the material utterly soundproof.
Be careful what you ask of me,
Jessica went on.
You'd find that smart mouth of yours shut up fairly quickly if I transform you. You wouldn't have any voice at all.
Bryce calculated the time difference between Lunathian and the western shores of Pangera and realized Jessica had probably just come back from dinner. That Pangeran red wine is heady stuff, isn't it? She was almost to the wooden desk when the first lights flicked on. A rack of them illuminated the dismantled gun hanging on the wall behind the desk, the Godslayer rifle gleaming as fresh as it had the day it had been forged. She could have sworn a faint whine radiated from the gold and steel, like the legendary lethal gun was still ringing after a shot. It unnerved her that it was in here, despite the fact that Jessica had split it into four pieces, mounted like a work of art behind her desk. Four pieces that could still be easily assembled. But it put her clients at ease, even while it reminded them that she was in charge. Bryce knew the sorceress never told them about the 6-inch engraved golden bullet in the safe beside the painting on the right wall. Jessica had shown it to her just once, letting her read the words etched onto the bullet. Memento mori. The same words that appeared in the mosaic in the meat market. It had seemed melodramatic, but some part of her had marveled at the bullet and at the rifle, so rare only a few existed in Midgard. Bryce powered up Jessica's computer, letting the female rattle off instructions before sending the file. Bryce was halfway down the stairs again when she asked her boss,
"Have you heard anything new about Luna's horn?"
A long, contemplative pause.
"Does it have to do with this investigation of yours?"
"Maybe."
Jessica's low, cold voice was an embodiment of the house she served.
"I haven't heard anything."
Then she hung up. Bryce gritted her teeth as she headed back to her desk on the showroom floor. Lahaba interrupted her by whispering through the iron door,
"Can I see Athy now?"
"No, Lily." He'd kept his distance this morning, too. "Good."
"Look toward where it hurts the most."
She had her list of Danica's locations. Unfortunately, she knew what she had to do next, what she'd woken up this morning dreading. Her phone rang in her clenched hand, and Bryce steeled herself for Jessica calling to bitch that she'd fucked up the file. But it was Hunt.
"Yeah?"
she asked by way of greeting. "There's been another murder." His voice was tight, cold. She nearly dropped the phone.
"Who?"
"I'm still getting the details, but it was about 10 blocks from here, near the gate in the old square."
Her heart beat so fast she could scarcely draw breath to say,
"Any witnesses?"
"No, but let's go over there.
Her hands shook. I'm busy, she lied.
Hunt paused. I'm not fucking around, Quinlan.
No. No, she couldn't do it, endure it, see it again.
Bryce forced herself to breathe, practically inhaling the peppermint vapors from the diffuser.
There's a client coming,
he banged on the gallery door, sealing her fate. We're leaving. Bryce's entire body was taut to the point of near trembling, as she and Hunt approached the magiscreens blocking the alley a few blocks away from the old square gate.
She tried to breathe through it, tried all the techniques she'd read and heard about regarding reining in her dread, that sickening, plunging feeling in her stomach. None of them worked.
Angels and fae and shifters milled about the alley, some on radios or phones. A jogger found the remains, Hunt said, as people parted to let him pass. They think it happened sometime last night.
He added carefully.
The 33rd's still working on getting an ID, but from the clothes, it looks like an acolyte from Luna's temple. Isaiah is already asking the temple priestesses who might be missing.
All sounds turned into a blaring drone. She didn't entirely remember the walk over.
Hunt edged around the magiscreen blocking the crime scene from view, took one look at what lay there, and swore. He whirled toward her, as if realizing what he was dragging her back into, but too late. Blood had splashed across the bricks of the building, pooled on the cracked stones of the alley floor, splattered on the sides of the dumpster. And beside that dumpster, as if someone had chucked them out of a bucket, sat clumps of red pulp. A torn robe lay beside the carnage. The droning turned into a roar, her body pulled farther away. Danica howling with laughter, Connor winking at her, Bronson and Zack and Zelda and Natalie and Thorne all in hysterics. Then nothing but red pulp. All of them, all they had been, all she had been with them, became nothing more than piles of red pulp. Gone, gone, gone. A hand gripped her shoulder. But not Athalar's. No, Hunt remained where he was, face now hard as stone. She flinched as Rune said at her ear, You don't need to see this. This was another murder, another body, another year. A medwitch even knelt before the body, a wand buzzing with first light in her hands, trying to piece the corpse, the girl, back together. Rune tugged her away, toward the screen and open air beyond. The movement shook her loose, snapped the droning in her ears. She yanked her body free from his grip, not caring if anyone else saw, not caring that he, as head of the Fae Ox units, had the right to be here. Don't fucking touch me! Rune's mouth tightened, but he looked over her shoulder to Hunt. You're an asshole. Hunt's eyes glittered. I warned her on the walk over what she'd see. He added a touch ruefully. I didn't realize what a mess it'd be.
He had warned her, hadn't he? She'd drifted so far away that she'd barely listened to Hunt on the walk, as dazed as if she'd snorted a heap of lightseeker.
Hunt added, She's a grown woman. She doesn't need you deciding what she can handle. He nodded toward the alley exit. Shouldn't you be researching? We'll call you if you're needed, Princeling. Fuck you, Rune shot back, shadows twining through his hair. Others were noticing now. You don't think it's more than a coincidence that an acolyte was killed right after we went to the temple?
Their words didn't register. None of it registered.
Bryce turned from the alley, the swarming investigators.
Rune said,
Bryce,
leave me alone, she said quietly, and kept walking.
She shouldn't have let Athalar bully her into coming, shouldn't have seen this, shouldn't have had to remember. Once, she might have gone right to the dance studio, would have danced and moved until the world made sense again. It had always been her haven, her way of puzzling out the world. She'd gone to the studio whenever she'd had a shit day. It had been 2 years since she'd set foot in one. She'd thrown out all her dance clothes and shoes, her bags. The one at the apartment had all been splattered with blood anyway. Danica's, Connor's,
and thorns on the clothes in the bedroom, and Zelda's and Bronson's on her secondary bag, which had been left hanging beside the door, blood patterns just like... A rain-kissed scent brushed her nose as Hunt fell into step beside her. And there he was, another memory from that night.
Hey,
Hunt said. Hey, he'd said to her so long ago. She'd been a wreck, a ghost, and then he'd been there, kneeling beside her, those dark eyes unreadable as he'd said,
hey.
She hadn't told him that she remembered that night in the interrogation room. She sure as hell didn't feel like telling him now. If she had to talk to someone, she'd explode. If she had to do anything right now, she'd sink into one of those primal fey wraths and... The haze started to creep over her vision, her muscles seizing painfully, her fingertips curled as if imagining shredding into someone.
Walk it off, Hunt murmured. Leave me alone, Athalar.
She wouldn't look at him, couldn't stand him or her brother or anyone. If the Acolyte's murder had been because of their presence at the temple, either as a warning or because the girl might have seen something related to the horn, if they'd accidentally brought her death about. Her legs kept moving, swifter and swifter. Hunt didn't falter for a beat. She wouldn't cry, wouldn't dissolve into a hyperventilating mess on the street corner, wouldn't scream or puke or... After another block, Hunt said roughly,
I was there that night.
She kept walking, her heels eating up the pavement. Hunt asked,
How did you survive the Crystallos?
He'd no doubt been looking at the body just now and wondering this. How did she, a pathetic half-breed, survive when full-blooded Vanir hadn't?
I didn't survive,
she mumbled, crossing a street and edging around a car idling in the intersection.
It got away.
But the Crystallos pinned Micah, ripped open his chest.
She nearly tripped over the curb and whipped around to gape at him.
That was Micah?
Chapter 24. She had saved Micah Domitus that night. Not some random legionary, but the god's-damned archangel himself. No wonder the emergency responder had launched into action when he traced the phone number. The knowledge rippled through her, warping and clearing some of the fog around her memories.
I saved the governor in the alley.
Hunt just gave her a slow, wincing nod. Her voice sharpened. Why was it a secret? Hunt waited until a flock of tourists had passed before saying,
For his sake. If word got out that the governor had his ass handed to him, it wouldn't have looked good.
Especially when he was saved by a half-breed.
No one in our group ever used that term. You know that, right? But yes, we did consider how it'd look if a 23-year-old human fey female who hadn't made the drop had saved the archangel when he couldn't save himself.
Her blood roared in her ears. Why not tell me, though? I looked in all the hospitals just to see if he'd made it. More than that, actually. She demanded answers about how the warrior was recovering, but she'd been put on hold or ignored or asked to leave.
I know, Hunt said, scanning her face. It was deemed wiser to keep it a secret, especially when your phone got hacked right after.
So I was just going to live in ignorance forever?
Did you want a medal or something? A parade?
She halted so quickly that Hunt had to splay his wings to pause too.
Go fuck yourself. What I wanted...
She tried to stop the sharp, jagged breaths that blinded her, built and built under her skin.
What I wanted,
she hissed, resuming her walk as he just stared at her, was to know that something I did made a difference that night. I assumed you'd dumped him in the Istros, some legionary grunt not worth the honor of a sailing.
Hunt shook his head. Look, I know it was shitty, and I'm sorry, okay? I'm sorry for all of it, Quinlan. I'm sorry we didn't tell you, and I'm sorry you're on my suspect list, and I'm sorry...
I'm on your what? She spat. Red washed over her vision as she bared her teeth.
After all of this, she seethed.
You think I am a fucking suspect?
She screamed the last words, only pure will keeping her from leaping on him and shredding his face off.
Hunt held up his hands. That, fuck, Bryce, that didn't come out right. Look, I had to consider every angle, every possibility, but I know now, Solas, when I saw your face in that alley, I realized it couldn't ever have been you, and
get the fuck out of my sight. He watched her, assessing, then spread his wings. She refused to back up a step, teeth still bared. The wind off his wings stirred her hair, throwing his cedar and rain scent into her face as he leapt into the skies.
Look toward where it hurts the most.
Fuck the Viper Queen. Fuck everything. Bryce launched into a run, a steady, swift run, despite the flimsy flats she'd switched into at the gallery. A run not toward anything or from anything, but just movement. The pounding of her feet on the pavement, the heaving of her breath. Bryce ran and ran, until sounds returned and the haze receded, and she could escape the screaming labyrinth of her mind. It wasn't dancing, but it would do. Bryce ran until her body screamed to stop, ran until her phone buzzed and she wondered if Erd herself had extended a golden hand. The phone call was swift, breathless. Minutes later, Bryce slowed to a walk as she approached the White Raven, and then stopped entirely before the alcove tucked into the wall just beside its service doors. Sweat ran down her neck, into her dress, soaking the green fabric as she again pulled out her phone. But she didn't call Hunt. He hadn't interrupted her, but she knew he was overhead. A few drops of rain splattered the pavement. She hoped it poured on Athalar all night. Her fingers hesitated on the screen, and she sighed, knowing she shouldn't. But she did. Standing there in that same alcove where she'd exchanged some of her final messages with Danica, she pulled up the thread. It burned her eyes. She scrolled upward, past all those final happy words and teasing, to the photo Danica had sent that afternoon of herself and the pack at the Sunball game, decked out in CCU gear. In the background, Bryce could make out the players on the field, Ethan's powerful form among them. But her gaze drifted to Danica's face, that broad smile she'd known as well as her own.
I love you, Bryce.
The worn memory of that mid-May day during their senior year tugged at her, sucked her in. The hot road bit into Bryce's knees through her torn jeans, her scraped hands trembling as she kept them interlocked behind her head, where she'd been ordered to hold them. The pain in her arms sliced like a knife. Broken. The males had made her put her hands up anyway. The stolen motorcycle was no more than scrap metal on the dusty highway. The unmarked semi-truck pulled over 20 feet away left idle. The rifle had been thrown into the olive grove behind the mountain road, wrenched from Bryce's hands in the accident that had led them here. The accident Danica had shielded her from, wrapping her body around Bryce's. Danica had taken the shredding of the asphalt for them both. 10 feet away, hands also behind her head, Danica bled from so many places her clothes were soaked with it. How had it come to this? How had things gone so terribly wrong?
Where are those fucking bullets?
The male from the truck shrieked to his cronies, his empty gun, that blessedly unexpectedly empty gun, clenched in his hand. Danica's caramel eyes were wide, searching, as they remained on Bryce's face. Sorrow and pain and fear and regret, all of it was written there.
I love you, Bryce.
Tears rolled down Danica's face.
And I'm sorry.
She had never said those words before. Ever. Bryce had teased her for the past 3 years about it, but Danica had refused to say them. Motion caught Bryce's attention to their left. Bullets had been found in the truck's cab. But her gaze remained on Danica, on that beautiful, fierce face. She let go, like a key turning in a lock, the first rays of the sun over the horizon. And Bryce whispered,
as those bullets came closer to that awaiting gun and the monstrous male who wielded it.
Close your eyes, Danica.
Bryce blinked, the shimmering memory replaced by the photo still glaring from her screen. Of Danica and the pack of devils years later, so happy and young and alive. Mere hours from their true end. The skies opened, and wings rustled above, reminding her of Athalar's hovering presence. But she didn't bother to look as she strode into the club. Chapter 25 Hunt knew he'd fucked up, and he was in deep shit with Micah, if Micah found out that he'd revealed the truth about that night. He doubted Quinlan had made that call, either to the sorceress or to Micah's office, and he'd make sure she didn't. Maybe he'd bribe her with a new pair of shoes or some purse or whatever the fuck might be enticing enough to keep her mouth shut. One fuck up, one misstep, and he had few illusions about how Micah would react. He let Quinlan run through the city, trailing her from the old square into the dark wasteland of Asphodel Meadows, then into the CBD, and back to the old square again. Hunt flew above her, listening to the symphony of honking cars, thumping bass, and the brisk April wind whispering through the palms and cypresses. Witches on brooms soared down the streets, some close enough to touch the roofs of the cars they passed. So different from the angels, Hunt included, who always kept above the buildings when flying. As if witches wanted to be a part of the bustle the angels defined themselves by avoiding. While he'd trailed Quinlan, Justinian had called with the information on the Crystallos, which amounted to a whole lot of nothing, a few myths that matched with what they already knew. Vic had called 5 minutes after that. The Viper Queen's alibis checked out. Then Isaiah had called, confirming that the victim in the alley was indeed a missing acolyte. He knew Dannon's suspicions were right. It couldn't be coincidence that they'd been at the temple yesterday, talking about the horn and the demon that had slaughtered Danica and the pack of devils, and now one of its acolytes had died at the Crystallos' claws. A fey girl, barely more than a child. Acid burned through his stomach at the thought. He shouldn't have brought Quinlan to the murder scene, shouldn't have pushed her into going, so blinded by his damn need to get this investigation solved quickly that he hadn't thought twice about her hesitation. He hadn't realized until he'd seen her look at the pulped body, until her face had gone white as death, that her quiet wasn't calm at all. It was shock, trauma, horror, and he'd shoved her into it. He'd fucked up, and Rune had been right to call him on that, but shit. He'd taken one look at Quinlan's ashen face and know she hadn't been behind these murders, or even remotely involved. And he was a giant fucking asshole for even entertaining the idea, for even telling her she'd been on his list. He rubbed his face. He wished Shahar were here, soaring beside him. She'd always let him talk out various strategies or issues during the 5 years he'd been with her 18th. Always listened and asked questions, challenged him in a way no one else had. By the time an hour had passed and the rain had begun, Hunt had planned a whole speech. He doubted Quinlan wanted to hear it or would admit what she'd felt today. But he owed her an apology. He'd lost so many essential parts of himself over these centuries of enslavement and war. But he liked to think he hadn't lost his basic decency. At least, not yet. After completing those 2,000-plus kills he still had to make if he failed to solve this case, however, he couldn't imagine he'd have even that left. Whether the person he'd be at that point would deserve freedom, he didn't know. Didn't want to think about it. But then Bryce got a phone call. Got one, didn't make one, thank fuck, and didn't break her stride to answer it. Too high up to hear, he could only watch as she'd shifted directions again and aimed, he realized 10 minutes later, for Archer Street. Just as the rain increased, she'd paused outside the White Raven and spent a few minutes on her phone. But despite his eagle-sharp eyesight, he couldn't make out what she was doing on it. so he'd watched from the adjacent roof and must have checked his own phone a dozen times in those 5 minutes like a pathetic fucking loser, hoping she'd message him. And right when the rain turned to a downpour, she put her phone away, walked past the bouncers with a little wave, and vanished into the White Raven without so much as a look upward. Hunt landed, sending Vaynir and humans skittering down the sidewalk. And the half-wolf, half-demonaki bouncer had the nerve to actually hold out a hand.
"Lines to the right,"
the male to his left rumbled.
"I'm with Bryce,"
he said. The other bouncer said,
"Tough shit. Lines on the right."
The line, despite the early hour, was already down the block.
"I'm here on Legion business,"
Hunt said, fishing for his badge, wherever the fuck he'd put it. The door cracked open, and a stunning Fey waitress peeked out.
"Rizzo says he's in, Crucius."
The bouncer who'd first spoken just held Hunt's stare. Hunt smirked.
"Some other time."
Then he followed the female inside. The scent of sex and booze and sweat that hit him had every instinct rising with dizzying speed as they crossed the glass-framed courtyard and ascended the steps. The half-crumbled pillars were uplit by purple lights. He'd never set foot in the club, always made Isaiah or one of the others do it, mostly because he knew it was no better than the palaces and country villas of the Pangeran Archangels, where feasts turned to orgies that lasted for days. All while people starved mere steps from those villas. Humans and Vaynir alike rooting through garbage piles for anything to fill their children's bellies. He knew his temper and triggers well enough to stay the fuck away. Some people whispered as he walked by. He just kept his eyes on Bryce, who was already in a booth between two carved pillars, sipping in a glass of something clear, either vodka or gin. With all the scents in here, he couldn't make it out. Her eyes lifted to him from the rim of her glass as she sipped.
"How'd you get in?"
"It's a public place, isn't it?"
She said nothing. Hunt sighed and was about to sit down to make that apology when he scented jasmine and vanilla and...
"Excuse me, sir.
He found himself looking at a lovely fawn, dressed in a white tank top and skirt short enough to show off her long, striped legs and delicate hooves. Her gently arcing horns were nearly hidden in curly hair that was pulled back into a coiled bun. Her brown skin dusted with gold that flickered in the club lights. Gods, she was beautiful. Juniper Andromeda, Bryce's friend in the ballet. He'd read her file, too. The dancer glanced between Hunt and Quinlan.
I hope I'm not interrupting anything.
He was just leaving, Bryce said, draining her glass. He finally slid into the booth.
I was just arriving.
He extended a hand to the fawn.
It's nice to meet you. I'm Hunt.
I know who you are,
the fawn said, her voice husky. Juniper's grip was light but solid. Bryce refilled her glass from a decanter of clear liquid and drank deep. Juniper asked her,
Did you order food? Rehearsal just let out and I'm starving.
Though the fawn was thin, she was leanly muscled, strong as hell beneath that graceful exterior. Bryce held up her drink.
I'm having a liquid dinner.
Juniper frowned, but she asked Hunt,
You want food?
Hell yes.
You can order whatever you want. They'll get it for you.
She raised a hand, signaling a waitress.
I'll have a veggie burger, no cheese, with a side of fries, vegetable oil only to cook them, and 2 pieces of pizza, plant-based cheese on it, please.
She bit her lip, then explained to Hunt,
I don't eat animal products.
As a fawn, meat and dairy were abhorrent. Milk was only for nursing babies.
Got it, he said. You mind if I do?
He'd fought alongside fawns over the centuries. Some hadn't been able to stand the sight of meat. Some hadn't cared. It was always worth asking. Juniper blinked, but shook her head. He offered the waitress a smile as he said,
I'll have... bone-in ribeye and roasted green beans.
What the hell? He glanced at Bryce, who was guzzling her booze like it was a protein shake. She hadn't eaten dinner yet, and even though he'd been distracted this morning when she'd emerged from her bedroom in nothing but a lacy hot pink bra and matching underwear, he'd noted through the living room window that she'd also forgone breakfast. And since she hadn't brought lunch with her or ordered in, he was willing to bet she hadn't eaten that either. So Hunt said, "She'll have lamb kofta with rice, roasted chickpeas, and pickles on the side. Thanks." He'd watched her go for lunch a few times now, and had scented precisely what was inside her takeaway bags. Bryce opened her mouth, but the waitress was already gone. Juniper surveyed them nervously, like she knew precisely what Bryce was about to...
"Are you going to cut my food, too?"
"What?"
"Just because you're some big, tough asshole doesn't mean you get the right to decide when I should eat, or when I'm not taking care of my body. I'm the one who lives in it. I know when I fucking want to eat. So keep your possessive and aggressive bullshit to yourself."
Juniper's swallow was audible over the music.
"Long day at work, Bryce?"
Bryce reached for her drink again, but Hunt moved faster, his hand wrapping around her wrist and pinning it to the table before she could guzzle down more booze.
"Get your fucking hand off me," she snarled.
Hunt threw her a half smile.
"Don't be such a cliche."
Her eyes simmered. "You have a rough day and you come to drown yourself in vodka?" He snorted, letting go of her wrist and grabbing her glass. He lifted it to his lips, holding her stare over the rim as he said,
"At least tell me you have good taste in..."
He sniffed the liquor. Tasted it.
"This is water."
Her fingers curled into fists on the table.
"I don't drink,"
Juniper said.
"I invited Bryce tonight. It's been a while since we've seen each other, and I have to meet some of the company members here later, so..."
"Why don't you drink?"
Hunt asked Bryce.
"You're the Umbra Mortis. I'm sure you can figure it out."
Bryce scooted out of the booth, forcing Juniper to get up.
"Though considering you thought I killed my best friend, maybe you can't."
Hunt bristled, but Bryce just declared, "I'm going to the bathroom." Then she walked right into the throng on the ancient dance floor, the crowd swallowing her as she wove her way toward a distant door between two pillars at the back of the space. Juniper's face was tight.
"I'll go with her."
Then she was gone, moving swift and light, two males gaping as she passed. Juniper ignored them. She caught up to Bryce midway across the dance floor, halting her with a hand on her arm. Juniper smiled, bright as the lights around them, and began speaking, gesturing to the booth, the club. Bryce's face remained cold as stone. Colder. Males approached, saw that expression, and didn't venture closer.
"Well, if she's pissed at you, it'll make me look better,"
drawled a male voice beside him. Hunt didn't bother to look pleasant.
"Tell me you've found something."
The crown prince of the Valbaran Fae leaned against the edge of the booth, his strikingly blue eyes lingering on his cousin. He'd no doubt used those shadows of his to creep up without Hunt's notice.
"Negative. I got a call from the Raven's owner that she was here. She was in bad enough shape when she left the crime scene that I wanted to make sure she was all right."
Hunt couldn't argue with that, so he said nothing. Rune nodded toward where the female stood motionless in the middle of a sea of dancers.
"She used to dance, you know. If she'd been able, she would have gone into the ballet like Juniper."
He hadn't known, not really. Those facts had been blips on her file.
"Why'd she drop it?"
"You'll have to ask her, but she stopped dancing completely after Danica died."
"And drinking, it seems."
Hunt glanced toward her discarded glass of water. Rune followed his line of sight. If he was surprised, the prince didn't let on. Hunt took a sip of Bryce's water and shook his head. Not a party girl at all, just content to let the world believe the worst of her, including him.
Hunt rolled his shoulders, wings moving with him, as he watched her on the dance floor.
Yeah, he'd fucked up. Royally.
Bryce looked toward the booth, and when she saw her cousin there, there were trenches of hell warmer than the look she gave Rune. Juniper tracked her gaze. Bryce took all of one step toward the booth, before the club exploded. Chapter 26. 1 minute, Athalar and Rune were talking. 1 minute, Bryce was about to go rip into both of them for their alpha hole protectiveness, smothering her even from afar. 1 minute, she was just trying not to drown in the weight that had yanked her under that too familiar black surface. No amount of running could free her from it, buy her a sip of air. The next, her ears hollowed out. The ground ripped from beneath her, the ceiling rained down, people screamed, blood sprayed, fear scented the air, and she was twisting, lunging for Juniper. Shrill, incessant ringing filled her head. The world had been tipped on its side. Or maybe that was because she lay sprawled on the wrecked floor, debris and shrapnel and body parts around her. But Bryce kept down, stayed arched over Juniper, who might have been screaming. That shrill ringing wouldn't stop. It drowned out every other sound. Coppery slickness in her mouth. Blood. Plaster coated her skin.
Get up.
Hunt's voice cut through the ringing, the screaming, the shrieking, and his strong hands wrapped around her shoulders. She thrashed against him, reaching for Juniper. But Rune was already there, blood running from his temple as he helped her friend stand. Bryce looked over every inch of Juniper, plaster and dust and someone else's green blood. But not a scratch, not a scratch, not a scratch. Bryce swayed back into Hunt, who gripped her shoulders.
We need to get out now, the angel was saying to Rune, ordering her brother like a foot soldier. There could be more.
Juniper pushed out of Rune's grip and screamed at Bryce.
Are you out of your mind?
Her ears wouldn't stop ringing, and maybe her brain was leaking because she couldn't talk, couldn't seem to remember how to use her limbs. Juniper swung. Bryce didn't feel the impact on her cheek. Juniper sobbed as if her body would break apart.
I made the drop, Bryce, 2 years ago. You haven't. Have you completely lost it?
A warm, strong arm slid across her abdomen, holding her upright. Hunt said, his mouth near her ear,
Juniper, she's shell-shocked. Give it a rest.
Juniper snapped at him.
Stay out of this!
But people were wailing, screaming, and debris was still raining down. Pillars lay like fallen trees around them. June seemed to notice, to realize. Her body. Gods, her body wouldn't work. Hunt didn't object when Rune gave them an address nearby and told them to go wait for him there. It was closer than her apartment, but frankly, Hunt wasn't entirely sure Bryce would let him in. And if she went into shock and he couldn't get past those enchantments? Well, Micah would spike his head to the front gates of the Comitium if she died on his watch. He might very well do that just for not sensing that the attack was about to happen. Quinlan didn't seem to notice he was carrying her. She was heavier than she looked. Her tan skin covered more muscle than he'd thought. Hunt found the familiar white-columned house a few blocks away. The key Rune had given him opened a green-painted door. The cavernous foyer was laced with two male scents other than the prince's. A flick of the light switch revealed a grand staircase that looked like it had been through a war zone. Scuffed oak floors and a crystal chandelier hanging precariously. Beneath it, a beer pong table painted with remarkable skill, portraying a gigantic fey male swallowing an angel whole. Ignoring that particular fuck you to his kind, Hunt aimed for the living room to the left of the entry. A stained sectional lay against the far wall of the long room, and Hunt set Bryce down there as he hurried for the equally worn wet bar midway down the far wall. Water. She needed some water. There hadn't been an attack in the city for years now, since Briggs. He'd felt the bomb's power as it rippled through the club, shredding the former temple and its inhabitants apart.
He'd leave it to the investigators to see what exactly it was, but even his lightning hadn't been fast enough to stop it. Not that it would have been any protection against a bomb, not in an ambush like that. He'd destroyed enough on battlefields to know how to intercept them with his power, how to match death with death. But this hadn't been some long-range missile fired from a tank. It had been planted somewhere in the club and detonated at a predetermined moment. There were a handful of people who might be capable of such a thing, and at the top of Hunt's list, there was Philip Briggs again, or his followers at least. Briggs himself was still imprisoned at the Adrestia prison. He'd think on it later, when his head wasn't still spinning, and his lightning wasn't still a crackle in his blood, hungry for an enemy to obliterate. Hunt turned his attention to the woman who sat on the couch, staring at nothing. Bryce's green dress was wrecked. Her skin was covered in plaster and someone else's blood. Her face pale, save for the red mark on her cheek. Hunt grabbed an ice pack from the freezer under the bar counter and a dish towel to wrap it in. He set the glass of water on the stained wood coffee table, then handed her the ice.
She slugged you pretty damn good.
Those amber eyes lifted slowly to him. Dried blood crusted inside her ears. A moment's searching in the sorry-looking kitchen and bathroom cabinet revealed more towels and a first aid kit. He knelt on the worn gray carpet before her, tucking his wings in tight to keep them from tangling with the beer cans that littered the coffee table. She kept staring at nothing as he cleaned out her bloody ears. He didn't have med magic like a witch, but he knew enough battlefield healing to assess her arched ears. The Fae hearing would have made that explosion horrific, the human bloodline then slowing down the healing process. Mercifully, he found no signs of continued bleeding or damage. He started on the left ear, and when he'd finished, he noticed her knees were scraped raw, with shards of stone embedded in them.
Juniper stands a shot of being promoted to principal, Bryce rasped at last. The first fawn ever. The summer season starts soon. She's an understudy for the main roles in two of the ballets, a soloist in all five of them. This season is crucial. If she got injured, it could interfere.
She made the drop. She would have bounced back quickly.
He pulled a pair of tweezers from the kit.
Still.
She hissed as he carefully pried out some shards of metal and stone from her knee. She'd hit the ground hard. Even with the club exploding, he'd seen her move. She'd thrown herself right over Juniper, shielding her from the blast.
This will sting,
he told her, frowning at the bottle of healing solution. Fancy, high-priced stuff. Surprising that it was even here, given that the prince and his roommates had all made the drop.
But it'll keep it from scarring.
She shrugged, studying the massive dark television screen over his shoulder. Hunt doused her leg with the solution, and she jerked. He gripped her calf hard enough to keep her down, even as she cursed.
I warned you.
She pushed a breath out between clenched teeth. The hem of her already short dress had ridden up with her movements. And Hunt told himself he looked only to assess if there were other injuries, but the thick, angry scar cut across an otherwise sleek, unnervingly perfect thigh. Hunt stilled. She'd never gotten it healed. And every limp he'd sometimes caught her making from the corner of his eye, not from her dumb fucking shoes, but from this. From him. From his clumsy battlefield instincts to staple her up like a soldier.
When males are kneeling between my legs, Athalar, she said, they're not usually grimacing.
What?
But her words registered, just at the moment he realized his hand still gripped her calf, the silky skin beneath brushing against the calluses on his palms. Just as he realized that he was indeed kneeling between her thighs and had leaned closer to her lap to see that scar. Hunt reeled back, unable to help the heat rising to his face. He removed his hand from her leg. Sorry, he ground out. Any amusement faded from her eyes as she said,
"Who do you think did it? The club?"
The heat of her soft skin still stained his palm.
"No idea."
"Could it have anything to do with us looking into this case?"
Guilt already dampened her eyes, and he knew the body of the acolyte flashed through her mind.
He shook his head. "Probably not. If someone wanted to stop us, a bullet in the head's a lot more precise than blowing up a club. It could easily have been some rival of the club's owner, or the remaining Kara's members looking to start more shit in this city."
Bryce asked, "You think we'll have war here?"
"Some humans want us to. Some Vanir want us to. To get rid of the humans, they say."
"They've destroyed parts of Pangaea with the war there," she mumbled.
"I've seen the footage."
She looked at him, letting her unspoken question hang. "How bad was it?"
Hunt just said,
"Magic and machines. Never a good mix."
The words rippled between them.
"I want to go home," she breathed.
He peeled off his jacket and settled it around her shoulders. It nearly devoured her.
"I want to shower all this off."
She gestured at the blood on her bare skin.
"Okay."
But the front door in the foyer opened, one set of booted feet. Hunt had his gun out, hidden against his thigh as he turned, when Rune walked in, shadows in his wake.
"You're not going to like this," the prince said.
She wanted to go home, wanted to call Juniper, wanted to call her mom and Randall just to hear their voices, wanted to call Fury and learn what she knew, even if Fury wouldn't pick up or answer her messages, wanted to call Jessica and make her find out what had happened. But she mostly just wanted to go home and shower.
Rune, stone-faced and blood-splattered, halted in the archway. Hunt slid the handgun back into its holster at his thigh before sitting on the couch beside her. Rune went to the wet bar and filled a glass of water from the sink. Every movement was stiff, shadows whispering around him. But the prince exhaled, and the shadows, the tension, vanished. Hunt spared her from demanding that Rune elaborate.
"I'm assuming this has to do with whoever bombed the club."
Rune nodded and tossed back a gulp of water.
"All signs point to the human rebels."
Bryce's blood chilled. She and Hunt swapped glances. Their discussion moments ago hadn't been far from the mark.
"The bomb was smuggled into the club through some new exploding liquid, hidden in a delivery of wine. They left the calling card on the crate, their own logo."
Hunt cut in. "Any potential connection to Philip Briggs?"
Rune said,
"Briggs is still behind bars."
A polite way of describing the punishment the rebel leader now endured at Vanir hands in a Drestria prison.
"The rest of his Kara's group isn't,"
Bryce croaked.
"Danica was the one who made the raid on Briggs in the first place. Even if he didn't kill her, he's still doing time for his rebel crimes. He could have instructed his followers to carry out this bombing."
Rune frowned.
"I thought they'd disbanded, joined other factions, or returned to Pangaea. But here's the part you're not going to like. Next to the logo on the crate was a branded image. My team and your team thought it was a warped C for Crescent City. But I looked at the footage of the storage area before the bomb went off. It's hard to make out, but it could also be depicting a curved horn."
"What does the horn have to do with the human rebellion?" Bryce asked.
Then her mouth dried out.
"Wait, do you think that horn image was a message to us?
To warn us away from looking for the horn? As if that acolyte wasn't enough?" Hunt mused.
"It can't just be coincidence that the club was bombed when we were there. Or that one of the images on the crate seems like it could be the horn, when we're knee-deep in a search for it. Before Danica busted him, Briggs planned to blow up the Raven. The Kara's sect has been inactive since he went to prison, but..."
"They could be coming back,"
Bryce insisted, looking to pick up where Briggs left off, or somehow getting directions from him even now.
Hunt looked somber.
Or it was one of Briggs's followers all along.
The planned bombing, Danica's murder, this bombing. Briggs might not be guilty, but maybe he knows who is. He could be protecting someone.
He pulled out his phone.
We need to talk to him.
Rune said,
Are you fucking nuts?
Hunt ignored him and dialed a number, rising to his feet.
He's in Adrestria prison, so the request might take a few days, he said to Bryce.
Fine.
She blocked out the thought of what exactly this meeting would be like. Danica had been unnerved by Briggs's fanaticism toward the human cause and had rarely wanted to talk about him. Busting him and his Kara's group, an offshoot of the main Ophian rebellion, had been a triumph, a legitimization of the Pack of Devils. It still hadn't been enough to win Sabine's approval.
Hunt tucked the phone to his ear.
Hey, Isaiah. Yeah, I'm all right. He stepped into the foyer, and Bryce watched him go.
Rune said quietly,
The Autumn King knows I've involved you in looking for the horn.
She lifted heavy eyes to her brother.
How pissed is he?
Rune's grim smile wasn't comforting.
He warned me of the poison you'd spew in my ear.
I should take that as a compliment, I suppose.
Rune didn't smile this time. He wants to know what you'll do with the horn if it's found.
Use it as my new drinking mug on game day.
Hunt gave a snort of laughter as he entered the room. Call over.
Rune just said,
He was serious.
I'll give it back to the temple, Bryce said. Not to him.
Rune looked at both of them as Hunt again sat on the couch. My father said that since I have now involved you in something so dangerous, Bryce, you need a guard to remain with you at all times, live with you. I volunteered.
Every part of her battered body ached. Over my dead fucking corpse.
Hunt crossed his arms. Why does your king care if Quinlan lives or dies?
Rune's eyes grew cold.
I asked him the same. He said that she falls under his jurisdiction as half-fey, and he doesn't want to have to clean up any messy situations. The girl is a liability, he said.
Bryce could hear the cruel tones in every word Rune mimicked, could see her father's face as he spoke them. She often imagined how it'd feel to beat in that perfect face with her fists, to give him a scar like the one her mother bore along her cheekbone, small and slender. No longer than a fingernail, but a reminder of the blow he'd given her when his hideous rage drove him too far. The blow that had sent Ember Quinlan running, pregnant with Bryce. Creep. Old hateful creep.
So he's just concerned about the PR nightmare of Quinlan's death before the summit,
Hunt said roughly, disgust tightening his face.
Don't look so shocked, Rune said, then added to Bryce, I'm only the messenger. Consider whether it's wise to pick this as your big battle with him.
No chance in hell was she letting Rune into her apartment to order her around, especially with those friends of his. It was bad enough she had to work with him on this case. Gods, her head was pounding. Fine, she said, simmering. He said I needed a guard. Not you specifically, right?
At Rune's tense silence, Bryce went on,
That's what I thought. Athalar stays with me instead,
order fulfilled.
Happy?
He won't like that.
Bryce smiled smugly, even as her blood simmered. He didn't say who the guard had to be. The bastard should have been more precise with his wording.
Even Rune couldn't argue against that.
If Athalar was shocked at Bryce's choice of roommates, he didn't let on.
Rune watched the angel glance between them, carefully.
Fuck. Had Athalar finally started putting it together, that they were more entwined than cousins should be, that Rune's father shouldn't be taking such an interest in her?
Bryce seethed at Rune.
Did you put your father up to this?
No,
Rune said.
His father had cornered him about the temple visit right as he left the ruined club,
Honestly, given how pissed the male had been, it was a miracle Rune wasn't dead in a gutter. He's got a network of spies that even I don't know about. Bryce scowled, but it morphed into a wince as she got off the couch, Athalar keeping a hand within easy reach of her elbow should she need it. Rune's phone buzzed, and he pulled it from his pocket long enough to read the message on the screen, and the others that began flying in. Declan had written in the group chain with Flynn.
"What the fuck happened?"
Flynn replied, "I'm at the club." Sabine sent Amelie Ravenscroft to head the ox packs hauling away debris and helping the wounded. "Amelie said she saw you leave, Rune. You all right?" Rune answered, just so they wouldn't call, "I'm fine. I'll meet you at the club soon." He squeezed the phone in his fist as Bryce made her way toward the front door and the hellscape beyond. Blue and red sirens blared, casting their light on the oak floors of the foyer. But his sister paused before reaching for the handle, twisting to ask him, "Why were you at the Raven earlier?" And here it was. If he mentioned the call Rizzo had made to him, that Rune had been keeping tabs on her, he'd get his head bitten off. So Rune half lied, "I want to check out your boss's library." Hunt paused, a step behind Bryce. It was impressive, really, to watch both of them plaster confused expressions on their faces.
"What library?" she asked, the portrait of innocence.
Rune could have sworn Athalar was trying not to smile, but he said tightly,
"The one everyone says is beneath the gallery."
"First I've heard of it,"
Hunt said with a shrug.
"Fuck off, Athalar."
Rune's jaw ached from clenching it so hard. Bryce said,
"Look, I get that you want in on our little cool kids club, but there's a strict membership vetting process."
"Yeah." Athalar was trying really hard not to smile. Rune growled,
"I want to look at the books there, see if anything about the horn jumps out."
She paused at the tone in his voice, the bit of dominance Rune threw into it. He wasn't above pulling rank, not where this was concerned. Though Athalar was glaring daggers at him, Rune said to his sister,
"I've been through the Fey archives twice, and,"
he shook his head,
"I just kept thinking about the gallery, so maybe there's something there."
"I searched it," she said. "There's nothing about the horn beyond vague mentions."
Rune gave her a half smile.
"So you admit there's a library?"
Bryce frowned at him. He knew that contemplative look.
"What?"
Bryce flipped her hair over a dirty, torn shoulder.
"I'll make a bargain with you. You can come hunt for the horn at the gallery, and I'll help in whatever way I can. If..."
Athalar whipped his head to her, the outrage on his face almost delightful. Bryce went on, nodding to the phone in Rune's hand.
"If you put Declan at my disposal."
"I'll have to tell him about this case then, and what he knows, Flynn will learn 2 seconds later."
"Fine. Go ahead and fill them in. But tell Deck I need intel about Danica's last movements."
"I don't know where he can get that,"
Rune admitted.
"The den would have it,"
Hunt said, eyeing Bryce with something like admiration.
"Tell Emmett to hack the den archives."
So Rune nodded.
"Fine. I'll ask him later."
Bryce gave him that smile that didn't meet her eyes.
"Then come by the gallery tomorrow."
Rune had to give himself a moment to master his shock at how easy it had been to get access. Then he said,
"Be careful out there."
If she and Athalar were right, and it was some Kara's rebels acting on Briggs's request or in his honor, the political mess would be a nightmare. And if he hadn't been wrong about that sea actually being an image of the horn, if this bombing and the Acolyte's murder were targeted warnings to them regarding their search for it, then the threat to all of them had just become a hell of a lot deadlier. Bryce said sweetly before continuing on,
"Tell your daddy we say hello, and that he can go fuck himself."
Rune gritted his teeth, earning another grin from Athalar, winged asshole. The two of them strode through the door, and Rune's phone rang a heartbeat after that.
Yeah,
he said. Rune could have sworn he heard his father tense before the male drawled,
Is that how you speak to your king?
Rune didn't bother replying. His father said,
Since you couldn't stop yourself from revealing my business, I wish to make one thing clear regarding the horn.
Rune braced himself.
I don't want the angels getting it.
Fine. If Rune had anything to say about it, no one would get the horn. It would go straight back to the temple with a permanent Fey guard.
Keep an eye on that girl.
Both eyes.
I mean it, boy.
So do I.
He let his father hear the growl of sincerity in his voice. His father went on.
You, as crown prince, revealed the secrets of your king to the girl and Athalar. I have every right to punish you for this, you know.
Go ahead, he wanted to say. Go ahead and do it. Do me a favor and take my title while you're at it. The royal bloodline ends with me anyway. Rune had puked after hearing it the first time when he was 13, sent to the Oracle for a glimpse of his future, like all Fae. The ritual had once been to foretell marriages and alliances. Today, it was more to get a feel for a child's career and whether they'd amount to anything. For Rune, and for Bryce years later, it had been a disaster. Rune had begged the Oracle to tell him whether she meant he'd die before he could sire a child, or if she meant he was infertile. She only repeated her words.
The royal bloodline shall end with you, Prince.
He'd been too much of a coward to tell his king what he'd learned. So he'd fed his father a lie, unable to bear the male's disappointment and rage.
The Oracle said, I would be a fair and just king.
His father had been disappointed, but only that the fake prophecy hadn't been mightier. So, yeah, if his father wanted to strip him of his title, he'd be doing him a favor, or even unwittingly fulfilling that prophecy at last. Rune had truly worried about its meaning once, the day he'd learned he had a little sister. He thought it might foretell an untimely death for her. But his fears had been assuaged by the fact that she was not and would never be formally recognized as part of the royal bloodline. To his relief, she'd never questioned why. In those early years when they were still close, Rune hadn't lobbied their father to publicly accept her. The Autumn King continued,
Unfortunately, the punishment you deserve would render you unable to look for the horn.
Rune's shadows drifted around him.
I'll take a rain check, then.
His father snarled, but Rune hung up. Chapter 27 The streets were packed with Vanir streaming from the still chaotic White Raven, all looking for answers about what the hell had happened. Various legionaries, Fae, and Ox pack members had erected a barricade around the site,